Well, we're talking about moomoos.
Welcome to episode 2 of Cullen and Friends Culinary Creations. I'm your host, Ian Campbell. We have Cullen Sweeney, who's our lead culinary star, and introducing Randy Watson, my friend from across the park. Welcome, gentlemen. So this episode is Bussin' Beef.
There's 8 levels of beef, guys, according to the FDA. The top 3 that we eat are prime, choice, and select. And then it goes all the way down to canning, which is the 8th one.
Delicious. And as I say at the end of every episode, right, Cullen and Randy, we do support, whenever economically and logistically feasible, ethically, locally raised food products.
Yes, it depends on how much money you make if you could do those things.
I know. And steak right now, on account of supply chain, is my understanding, is so expensive.
Yes, ribeyes are going for about $20 a pound at Albertsons by me. And they're choice. They're not even prime. They're choice.
Oh, wow.
Well, this is why I advocate heavily the burning of the Amazon rainforest to increase the national beef supply.
And palm.
Yes, absolutely. F*** the orangutans.
Yeah, dude, we need palm and beef.
That's fantastic.
Totally kidding, though. I don't agree with that at all.
Oh, no. I was down there the other day burning palm trees myself.
Oh, my God.
I think he's kidding.
Yeah, right? I can't tell.
Ah, well, time will tell.
Time will tell.
That is true. What dish are we starting with first? Do we start with like steak, or do we go to ground beef up?
We could talk about anything, man. There's so many different cuts of beef. A cow is a large animal, and the American cuts provide so many varieties of textures and flavors. And you know, ground beef is one whole thing because it's just, according to the FDA, again, you know, ground beef can be up to 2% bone and cartilage and God knows what else, organ meat. So it's like when you buy that tube of ground beef at Walmart or whatever, it's like 10 pounds. You're getting a lot of different parts of cow in there, but it's still delicious.
It still is.
So should we talk burgers first? I mean, that's the all-American beef product, right? Burgers and steak. I mean, that's what we're all about. I mean, there's a burger joint in every corner in this country.
That's true. Randy likes burgers.
Oh, I love a good burger.
Now, are we talking about grinding our own meat? I haven't done that, but I'd love a grinder for Christmas. Hint, hint.
I tried that in a food processor because I heard about it on, I think, Alton Brown's show, and it did not work.
No, that sounds like a nightmare.
Yes, it ended up being just a mushy mess.
Did you still eat it? Like, what do you do with that? Because I like the idea of meat porridge.
Yeah, I turned it into beef patties, and I seasoned them heavily, and they were okay, but wasn't the right consistency.
That almost must be like those burgers you got in elementary school that were like just weirdly consistent throughout.
Yes,
like the pink paste for the chicken nuggets.
Those frozen. We're talking about bad burgers here. The frozen beef patty that comes like stacked with the wax paper in between.
Absolutely.
In like a bread bag, you know, those things are like, God knows what is in those burger patties, and you cook them from frozen. So they're just like burnt to a crisp. But
I think we should, I interrupted you.
No, go right ahead, Ian. You're the host.
I think let's start, like, we just started with bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
Why not? What's your fast food burger? I do consider Culver's fast food, but it's, you sit down in the dining room and then they bring you your burger. So their butter burger is delicious, but they're not a national chain. Burger King is my favorite burger, fast food wise.
I think it depends on where you're from, right? Randy, yeah. where you're in Minneapolis as well?
I'm in St. Paul over here in Mears Park, but I grew up in the heart of beef country in Iowa.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. What was, are there Culver's in Iowa too?
That we do have Culver's, yes.
What would your preferred, even hometown burger be?
It's a chain called Bebop's. It's like a 1950s themed thing with like 6 locations, and they just slather them in grease and mayonnaise and like shredded lettuce, and it's amazing.
I love mayonnaise on my burger.
That is an underrated burger condiment.
It is. Mayonnaise is the most underrated condiment in the country. It's like an American condiment. I mean, it's French in origin, but you know, it's like we buy it by the gallon here. But yeah,
I had a teriyaki wagyu burger with, and I was going to make wasabi mayo on it. I mean, you can even have a bit of sweetness in your burger.
Let me tell you about a burger that I had in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I think it was the best burger that I've ever had in my entire life. And I went back to get another one, and the management changed, and it was not the same product. So it starts off with a half-pound prime American Wagyu burger patty, cooked medium rare. And then on top are fried red onions that are battered, chili con queso, regular chili with beans, a béarnaise sauce, and bacon, and blue cheese. And it's served on a brioche bun, and it was called the Dirty Burger because there's no possible way to eat it without just covering your beard with cheese and mayonnaise.
Hey.
And béarnaise sauce.
Colin, have you had a colonoscopy recently? What was that like?
I've had two.
You should have gotten a before and after with that burger. I think that would have been really interesting.
I recreated it at home, actually. I recreated it from memory, and I didn't have a brioche bun that was big enough, so I used challah bread to stand up to the sloppiness, because challah bread's really sturdy. And I was able to make it, and I served it to like five different people, and they were like, it was so funny watching them eat it. You know, it's like it's just, it turns into mush, you know? But I think that's the best burger I've ever had, because there were so many things on it, but still the patty stood out, the bread stood out, the little bit of béarnaise, the little fried onion strips, the bacon. You could taste everything in every bite, even though it was just this huge mess, you know?
I don't know about that.
I don't know about that.
But Randy and I, we go to the Bulldog here in Lower Town, and they have a new Wagyu burger. Then it changes every week, but it's the same local American Wagyu. And I think the most bizarre one, which I would not try because I prefer savory burgers. Remember that?
Oh, I know the one you're going to take.
Elvis burger. The Elvis burger, right?
Is that with peanut butter and banana?
Yeah, with the bananas and the peanut butter.
And bacon on a burger.
You know, that's how Elvis died.
I thought it was his blatant abuse of benzos and amphetamines.
No, but the myth is that Elvis died eating a peanut butter and banana sandwich on the toilet.
I would probably die eating that on the toilet too.
Yeah, probably. The drugs didn't help either.
You know what? That sounds great though. I've had all sorts of weird burgers, like, you know, like a goat burger. We're talking beef, but like a goat burger with cranberry sauce and brie on a sweet bun. You know, it's like there's so many things to talk about with burgers. Every place has their own specialty, right? But I feel like no matter where you go, you can get beef on a soft, like, Kaiser roll or, like, you know, whatever white bun with cheddar and bacon and tomato, lettuce, mayo, ketchup, mustard, whatever. You can get that, like, anywhere, at any diner, at any restaurant. They always have a hamburger option. That's how, like, intrinsic it is in our culture, you know?
The St. Dinette Burger, which is the bougie place near me and Randy, they make their own in-house American. They marinate it in actual French champagne. And it's $16 for a double, and nothing comes with it. But right, Randy, it's delicious.
It's really good, but I'm a big believer in like throwing as many fucking things on the cheeseburger as possible.
Okay, what are your favorite toppings, Randy?
I'm really boring with it. Like, I like my lettuce, my tomatoes, my onions. Not a big bacon
guy.
That's
classic, though. I mean, that's what everybody loves.
Yeah,
you know, that's what I'm talking about. They have that option almost everywhere you go, and it's usually pretty damn good, you know?
Yeah, and the place he was just mentioning, will, I'm pretty sure if you were to ask for any of that, would throw something at you from the kitchen.
Yeah. I understand. No modifications on the order, right? Well, that's another thing we talk about is hot dogs, because beef is in hot dogs sometimes.
Allegedly.
In Chicago... In Chicago, as you guys know, if you go to a hot dog stand and you ask for ketchup, they'll kick you out.
Oh, yeah. No, anytime I'm in Chicago, I'm a big believer in getting anything made on a cart. And anytime I'm in Chicago, it's three hot dogs a day walking around.
Yeah.
Now, can you choose between beef and pork when you get a Chicago dog, or are they traditionally one or the other?
A traditional Chicago dog is a Vienna beef. And actually, I lived about two blocks from the Vienna beef factory for a year in a neighborhood called Midtown. And nobody knows that neighborhood except for the Midtown Tennis Club. So, like, all the rich people from Lincoln Park go there and play tennis. But the Vienna beef factory is right there, and they actually have a kitchen you can go to and eat. And the workers eat there with their galoshes and their rubber suits. And it's really depressing. But I don't know how much beef is in a Vienna hot dog. Like, I don't know if it's a pork, chicken, beef mixture or, like, what it is.
Do I want to know?
I don't think I want to know. Can I give you guys my personal burger recipe?
Yeah, of course.
I like talking about my own recipes.
I was just going to ask for that. And then maybe Randy has one.
Great. So my favorite, I've developed it over the last 10 years or so. Again, just like the pasta recipe we talked about in the last episode. These are things that I've created on my own. I kind of work on because they're kind of staples and I like staples. So my favorite burger to make, and it's not for everybody. Disclaimer, it's not for everybody. Same thing as the pasta. It's too flavorful for some people. If you don't like garlic, you're not going to like it. So it's a burger patty. Doesn't matter what you use, you know, just choice ground beef. I like ground chuck. That's my favorite, 80-20. But if you get 80-20, it's different than getting ground chuck. When you get ground chuck, you know, it's actually chuck, and chuck has the most flavor to me, except for, you know, like the legs. But anyway, so you take a patty, you season it with, you know, whatever blend you want. Two strips of applewood smoked bacon, thick cut. It has to be applewood smoked. Fresh arugula. And then you make a aioli with mayonnaise, raw garlic, sumac, which is a Middle Eastern table spice that tastes like lemon and is like a bright red color, dark red colored. And you mix a lot of that in. And then a little bit of white wine vinegar and a hell of a lot of black pepper. You mix that. You let it sit on the counter for about a half an hour so the garlic infuses into the mayo. And I got to tell you, if you're not a fan of garlic breath, you can't do it because your gums are going to be tingling after you eat this.
Oh, yum.
So you put it all together on a pretzel roll, and then you use aged cheddar cheese. My preference is the Tillamook 2-year. I love that.
Oh, stuff. Hell yeah.
And it melts real nicely on a burger, and a nice thick cut of that cheese with the bacon. Mm. No tomato, no anything else, just like that. And it is my favorite burger to make.
That doesn't sound bad, actually.
It's a unique taste because it's so garlic forward. And with the pretzel roll, you get a little bit of sweetness and a little bit of saltiness. So it's dense and, you know, it holds up to the flavors. And my favorite thing is to cook the burger, obviously, like medium rare. So when you push everything down to like compress it, I don't know if you guys do that before you eat a burger, but when you push it down, it, like, all the juices soak into the pretzel roll. Oh my God. And it mixes with the arugula, the beef juices with the arugula and the mayonnaise. I could eat that like a salad.
Does your cat want to join the podcast?
You can hear?
Oh, I thought that was part of like the rest of the episode. We were just going to talk about cat recipes.
No, she's pissed. I'm not paying attention to her. That's why she's yelling. Should I put her in the other room?
That's up to you.
Yeah, I'll put her in the other room.
Yeah, that was good comic relief. Thanks for the recovery, Randy.
One second.
I'll pause.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat. The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Yeah, no, last time I was in Texas, I'm like, what do we eat here? He's like, what a burger. I'm like, all right, let's try it. It's disappointing.
Dude, it's gross. Like, they have, like, fresh lettuce, and that's about it. All right, well, Randy, let's hear about your burger, man. I want to hear your recipe.
I was just talking about this with Ian. I am still struggling to think of the best burger I've ever had because I've eaten so many of them.
Do you have a recipe, though, that you like? Or
what's your go-to when you cook burgers? I mean, do you cook burgers at home or at a grill? Or
yeah, I do them on the cast iron because I don't have a grill.
Oh, cast iron's my favorite, bro. I love my cast iron.
Yeah, yeah. I get the fattiest beef I can find, patty the shit out of it, throw some egg in there, and a little bit of breadcrumb, usually just to
hell yeah.
I way overdo it. Bunch of chili pepper, salt, pepper.
Egg.
Egg. fry it up, slap a shit of mayonnaise on the bun. I'm not that picky about the bun. Lettuce, tomato, whatever kind of peppers I happen to have in the fridge. Queso fresco, if I got it.
I love queso fresco, man.
I just really, I'm just doing taco burgers, aren't I? Yeah. Anyways, yeah, some diced tomatoes and onions, and then jalapenos.
Yum. Did you guys ever have pizza burgers as a kid? That's a very Midwestern dish.
Pizza burgers.
It's basically sloppy Joe, but with pizza sauce, and it's really good. And you melt mozzarella on the, what are the long buns called? Those aren't hoagies, are they?
No, that's definitely a thing in South Minneapolis, because I used to bartend down there, and people would, you know, custom order them. And there's like two bars across the street that do pizza burgers. It's just a patty with mozzarella and red sauce on it. I mean, everything I just described.
Oh my God. Is there a base?
No, no. It's the patty, the cheese, and the sauce.
No, like pasta or rice or a bun or something. Damn. Have you guys ever heard of Loco Moco?
I don't speak Latin.
Excuse me?
Loco Moco. No, it's a Hawaiian.
Is that the, that sounds really familiar.
It is, bro. It's so they use spam sometimes, but it's also burger patties, and it's like a comfort food.
Well, Hawaiian, I assume there was spam.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, you could do burger patties or spam. But what they do is they put rice on a bed. They take two burger patties, they cook them up how you know whatever burger patties you want, season however you want, and then they put onion brown gravy on top of two eggs.
Yum.
Yeah, two over easy eggs.
Or the eggs, I don't know.
And then you break the yolk and mix it with the gravy, and then you mix it all up with the rice. It's delicious. It's comfort food, and it's so cheap to make. When I was in college, I used to make that all the time.
Yeah, that's definitely telling of Hawaii being such a fused country culturally.
Yeah, yeah. It's like based on, you know, like what they have, right? So they have rice, they have onions, you know, they
have beef. Well, and the brown gravy, because, you know, it's what, Japanese, Filipinos, Native Hawaiians, apparently some white people. And so, like, that gravy is really definitely Southeastern Asia.
Yeah, it's a great dish, man. I've never tried it with spam, but since we're talking beef, it's kind of related.
I don't maybe.
Yeah. So we've been talking about burgers for 20 minutes, boys. Do you guys want to switch over to something else?
Yeah, what are we doing? Should we go right into steak?
Oh, we could go into steak. I mean, oh, man, so much. Oh, I love steak.
I know. On page 647, it's called Meat and the Joy of Cooking, which I recommend for everyone. There's an actual diagram of the animal. So going from left to right, you've got the chuck, which is part of the arm and shoulder, right? Blade and neck.
Yeah, it's almost like kind of like the boob and the shoulder.
Yeah, and then the ribs, short loin. Then you got the sirloin. Oh, I didn't know sirloin was there.
Sirloin's on the tail end of the rib.
Where's the tenderloin?
The tenderloin's inside of the rib.
Inside of the rib. And then there's the rump and the heel.
Yes. What's the heel? Is that the bottom leg of the back?
Yes.
Oh, I've never... Actually, one time I had to cut one of those up and take all the elastin out of it, you know, the silver skin. It took me an hour to dissect about 2 pounds of meat.
And you are correct. This does say... mentions the 8 levels of beef, prime, choice, and select.
Read them off.
So prime, the highest grade, is scarce. Choice is generally the highest quality, sold in most supermarkets. The remaining grades for beef are used in commercial and manufactured meat products. Ew, such as canned meats or soups, grade school burgers, and McDonald's.
Speaking of burning the Amazon.
Ugh. And is that fresh quarter pound? No, we're not talking burgers anymore. We're going into steak.
Yeah, no more burgers. We're going to steak.
And now you boys both do cast iron. And for those of us that have never done it before, it looks complicated, but is it pretty straightforward, guys?
All you need is a stick of butter and whatever else you want to throw in there with
honestly, it. Bro, it's the cast iron for me is a product of my living in apartments because I could never have a grill. So how do you get browning? How do you get the Maillard reaction, you know, without having a grill? You can't do it in a skillet. It doesn't get hot enough because as soon as you put a cold steak in a skillet, it gets cold. Cast iron retains heat better than almost anything besides copper. So when you put a cold steak in a cast iron pan that's hot, it just sizzles away, baby. It's amazing.
No, the best steaks I've ever made have been in the cast iron.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I prefer cast iron to grills almost any day of the week. However, when you're cooking about, you know, for like 20 people, a grill is really useful to cook steaks on.
Oh, yeah.
I do that a lot. I do that a lot in El Paso here. I cook for my girlfriend's family almost every weekend, and they love their steaks. They're from Chihuahua. You know, they're from Juarez, and Chihuahua in Mexico is huge, huge on steaks. They have different cuts than we have here in America, but it's all about like the best cuts and like cooking correctly and, you know, like just salt and pepper, and that's it. You know?
What are your favorite cuts? My sirloin, it used to be cheap. I always like because it. I don't like
sirloin is great because it's packed with flavor, but it doesn't have a lot of fat.
I don't like a lot of fat. I'm a sirloin tenderloin guy.
Oh no, I'm all about the fat. No. Fat is flavor.
All
bro.
The more fat.
Brandy, I agree with you 100%. Fat is flavor. Yeah. Honestly, ribeye is 30% fat. 30%.
What's a New York strip compared to a ribeye?
It's like 28, 25. I mean, but that's on average. Every cow is totally different. You know, you have to, when you're buying steaks in the supermarket, you can't order steaks online because you really have to go and look at them because every steak is different. You can see.
I know.
Well, I'm body positive. I don't like to apply that sort of objectivity to animals.
Holy shit. I was getting so into the shopping thing, you threw me off.
Yeah, the cows that do yoga taste the best.
Dude, happy cows taste the best, for sure. I've eaten happy cows that were like named, and they were like part of the family. And like, and then they slaughter the cow, and even the ground beef is like, holy shit, this is the best burger I've ever had. No, but my favorite cut is definitely ribeye. It has so many different components to it. It's almost like three steaks in one. You know, you got the Delmonico, and then you got the flap on the rib, you know, that has all the fat cap on the outside. And then you have that little thing on the edge of the Delmonico that's like this perfect little nugget of tenderness. So ribeyes all the way, 100% my favorite. But what about you, Randy?
No, also the ribeyes are what I generally buy. Do you baste them like crazy with them or just throw them on, warm them up?
I actually do a couple things. So the way I cook my steak in a cast iron is I take the steak out of the fridge about an hour before I cook it. And I salt it with just regular table salt, the kosher salt, whatever I got. You don't oversalt it, but it's a dry brine. You leave it on the counter for an hour, then you rinse it off, and then you put a little bit of oil on it, high heat oil, and then you season it with whatever steak seasoning you want. My preferred are from the Spice House. Again, shout out to that place. They have such good blends. But you throw it in the cast iron after you heat it up to about 500 degrees, maybe 2.5 minutes aside, put it in the oven for 4 minutes after that at 400 degrees, and you got yourself a medium rare steak that's brown on both sides.
That's not bad at all. Now, I like to throw it in there, like you said, 2 minutes aside. Then I yank it off generally and throw a stick of butter in there and a couple sprigs of rosemary, some thyme, and some garlic cloves.
And you baste it. That's how Ruth Chris does their steaks, man. The butter basting.
Yeah, and then I got really into pine nuts. A lot of pine nuts recently.
Oh, the rosemary, the pine nuts, the butter. That all sounds incredible to me. You know, usually what I do is I take the steak off. I let the cast iron cool down because it's still like 500 degrees from the oven. And then.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't. That's why I take the steak off, is because otherwise I brown the butter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But what I like is actually brown butter, burnt noisette. From the cast iron, it soaks up all the beef juices and the brown seasonings from the bottom of the pan, and I scrape the pan.
I don't speak Indonesian or whatever that was.
That's French. but anyway, yeah. So you throw like 2 tablespoons of butter in there, and you let it melt, and then you got brown butter on top of your steak. And that's honestly, besides béarnaise sauce, I think brown butter is probably the best steak condiment you could possibly have.
I love making béarnaise, and as long as you monitor it and you know right before that egg curdles, it gets to a level of thickness. If you want to be precise, you can use a thermometer, right?
Yeah, béarnaise is really tricky because you got to make the hollandaise first, which is tricky, and then you got to add the vinegar, which is hard because then you have the potential to break the sauce instantly if you do it too quickly.
There's a blender version. That sounds interesting.
You know, I hear about these blender versions. I've never actually tried it, man. I've always done the double boiler.
Dry white wine, tarragon vinegar, shallots.
Shallots, yep. The tarragon is really the flavor in there.
blender hollandaise sauce, put in food processor, 3 large egg yolks, lemon juice, white pepper, high speed, 1 minute. Slowly add. Oh, it's the same process, but you're relying on the machine. This seems like less risk to your eggs. You slowly add the very warm to hot clarified butter.
Well, how do you cook yours, Stacey?
Oh, don't ask. On the broiler.
Oh.
But I rub them with butter and olive oil, salt, pepper, and then medium rare on my broiler. If you put it really close to the element, is depending upon the thickness of the meat, right? Maybe 3 minutes each side. Let it rest 10 minutes, and once in a while, I'll melt blue cheese on top.
I would like to give a shout out to one of the best steaks I've had in a long time. I had it with Ian and a friend of ours at the Brazilian joint.
Oh, that was amazing!
That blue wagyu. Or you didn't have it blue because you don't have taste buds. But
oh, I love, dude. Blue is when you have a really good steak, like a really good, like a dry aged, you know, 50-day steak. Having that shit blue is like is another level.
Oh no, I had pictures of it sliced up, and I look at it on my phone sometimes.
it's like just to get excited
to warm up. Yeah.
No, man. Colin, I don't know if I told you about this, but it's an American Wagyu. We know the owner, but we're not going to give away the price that we get. And it's...
because we didn't pay for it.
I know. It was served on a burning, flaming hot block of salt, blue, and they slice it table side, and then you cook it as long as you want, if you want.
That's an experience and a half.
Yeah, I didn't actually cook it because I just took it right off.
You know, that speaks to something that I want to talk about real quick is that, you know, steak, so beef has what, 12, 13 ribs? Cows have 12, 13 ribs. So you get maybe, you know, depending on how thick, if you cut it like an inch, you get like, you know, maybe 16 steaks, something like that, right? Maybe from one side of the beef, so you get 32 steaks per cow. A cow weighs what? I don't even know how much, 1,500 pounds, 1,000 pounds, 500 pounds?
I have a chart here that says 2 pigs is half a cow, and then 14 chickens makes half a pig. How does this work?
Where does the triangle block go? In the square hole?
I don't know. I'm not a math guy.
No. I'm saying what is special about steak is that it's expensive. And when you have things that are like an experience.
1,600 pounds for a female.
Yeah, and you get 32 steaks off of that, man. No wonder they're expensive. I mean, when you buy a side of beef, you can buy a side of beef for $5 a pound. You know? Good beef.
It's the f***ing rainforest.
No, I'm talking about, you know, in the USA. I mean, I don't know how much beef costs overseas. It's probably way more expensive. Because in this country, we worship the cow, man. I mean, Hindus actually worship cows. But we worship the eating of the cow. You know, so like steaks are such a special experience. When you go out to a special steakhouse and they do stuff like that, where you can cook it to your own temperature and on a block of salt, that is something that is like tremendously enjoyable.
But no, yeah, it's definitely a uniquely, almost, I would say, American experience. I guess American in the hemisphere sense. South America, you know, is big on the steaks too, but...
Argentina,
Chile, cowboys, you know, South America.
So steaks. So I think the fanciest steak is a Chateaubriand. You guys know what that is?
It's house something.
It's a bone-in filet mignon that's about a foot tall. So there's like only like...
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, there's only like 6 of them per animal. So it's cooked with the bone in a hot oven. It's browned first, and then it's served with the béarnaise sauce, but it stands up on the plate about a foot tall, and then it's carved tableside. And it's a bone-in filet mignon. So that usually costs about $50 a pound. A lot of restaurants don't serve that anymore. That is, once again, you know, we were talking about, you know, hotel recipes like the Caesar salad. That is an old hotel recipe. That's an old hotel cut that is not served in a lot of steakhouses anymore. You'll only find it in places that, you know, are like, you know, kind of old school steakhouses, like the Chicago kind of steakhouses, like Morton's and Gibson's and stuff like that, you know? I never liked Gibson's, though. My favorite was always James Burke's. Yeah, I think that's the name of it. Anyway, this guy was from New York. He ended up getting busted for, like, cocaine or something like that. but he owned three restaurants, and he aged.
It's on brand.
Yeah, right. He aged all his beef in a Himalayan salt pink Himalayan salt cellar. And it was, you can get a 45-day age steak, a 30-day age steak, and a 58-day age steak, I think. And everything, every cut, you know? And that was, for the money, I think that was the best steak I ever had.
Now, Randy, did you go to the strip club before they closed? That was the name of a fancy steakhouse, the strip club.
No, I went by it a million times. I just thought it was a strip club.
That's funny.
Because it looked like a strip club. It was in a neighborhood where there would be a strip club right there.
Yeah, but it was one of the best steakhouses in the city, I heard. And plus, the next day at the water cooler, you can be like, I had some good tube steak at the strip club last night.
Okay, I have had some pretty good meals at the strip clubs before. You know, the buffets. Not bad.
Yeah, that's funny. I was just thinking about that. You know, there's so many places that offer, like, steak and lobster, you know, as a special for like $6.99. You're like, how is that possible? But I remember I went to there's a steakhouse in the Thompson Center in Chicago, which is right in the loop where all the trains meet. It's one of the,
yeah, I've been,
yeah, for sure. And there's like a food court there, right? And on the first floor, right on the street, there's a steakhouse. I can't remember the name, but you go there, the steak is like $6, but if you want butter, it costs $2. If you want a baked potato, it costs $5. If you want cheddar on that baked potato, it costs another $2. If you, you know, so by the time you get out of there, you pay $20 and you get a steak the size of a, you know, of a hockey puck, you know, and it's like not very good quality. So, steak is also, I think it is one of those things that's just like steak and hamburgers. They're so in our culture.
Yeah, like even your basic like rubber chicken dinner, you know, when it's chicken or steak, you're better off taking the chicken because it's not going to be. You're,
yeah.
When you order a steak, you have a certain vision of what you're getting. I think there's less letdown potential with chicken.
Well, you know, we're lucky to have the rating system in this country. The FDA actually stamps every single animal with a blue stamp to tell you what kind of they cut it. They cut it right between the sixth and the seventh rib, I believe, and they look at the ribeye, and they look at the tenderloin, and they look at the flap, and they say how much fat is inside of this animal, inside of the muscle fibers of this animal, and that's how they grade it. And like if you have a select steak compared to a prime steak, totally different experience, no matter how you cook it.
I really did not know anything about that system or its impact, and I guess just what that means.
We're lucky that like most of the steaks we buy are choice, you know, because choice is really good. And that's what we have in the supermarket.
Yeah, if I sit down at like we were saying Morton's, that's premium?
Prime.
Prime. All right.
It's all prime. Most of the prime steak in this country, most of the prime beef in this country goes to restaurants.
Okay.
You can also find it at Costco and Sam's Club. They always have a special department for it. And they sell everything from brisket to ground beef. In prime fashion, and it's all, you know, way more expensive than choice. You know, like a prime brisket will cost you like $13 a pound compared to like a choice brisket, which is like $4 a pound.
Now, if it's, let's say, grass-fed organic, does that automatically make it prime or choice or not necessarily?
It does not at all. That's just a feeding method. Grass-fed beef, I find, is better.
I do too.
Grass-finished beef is even better. Grass-fed, grass-finished beef is even better.
As someone from Iowa, I'm going to really advocate the method of just stuffing them full of corn.
There's nothing wrong with grain-fed beef. I mean, some of those cows end up being delicious. I mean, I feel like that's normally what we get choice beef from is grain-fed cows. But if you have the choice of the same price steak that's grass-fed or grain-fed, I'd probably go with grass-fed. But, what is another steak experience that you guys remember?
Oh, beef stroganoff. Randy, wasn't that good? Randy and I made it, but I taught Randy how to make the gravy.
Oh, wow.
Well, you just told me you throw sour cream in it, which I thought was odd.
And pickle juice.
Didn't do pickle juice. Did some Dijon.
Oh, yeah. That works.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to walk through that recipe? That's easy. Or we can do something different.
I'd rather just keep moving along.
No, we talked about steaks for 20 minutes. We could change it up. We could talk about anything. There's roast. There's butchering. There's
meatballs.
Oh, my God. Meatballs. Jesus. Mama's meatballs.
We have porcupine meatballs here in Minnesota.
What are those?
They're basically made with rice.
That's how albondigas are made.
Excuse me?
Albondigas is Mexican for meatball, or Spanish for meatball, but albondigas is a Mexican dish that is it's ground beef with seasonings, onion, and rice, and you put it in a meatball, and then you cook it in a stock.
Oh. You got to put oil in your breadcrumbs, because then they bake crispier. At least I do.
Yeah, I like putting Parmesan and horseradish in my breadcrumbs sometimes.
Ooh.
Parmesan, I do. I like Parmesan in there. I'm always interested in whenever I order something from a dish that normally has no beef equivalent, like whenever I go get Thai and someone gets beef. I've always just wondered how that translates.
Yeah. What do you mean specifically? I'm interested.
I don't know. Whenever I go get like Thai food and someone will order like the beef pad Thai, I'm like, oh, just an interesting, you know, little thing that I guess I didn't consider is that in Thailand, there's really not a lot of beef, if any.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I know what you mean.
Yeah, beef. It's interesting that beef. I always thought that beef is a dish in Thai food and Chinese food.
Well, we do export a lot of beef.
Yeah, yeah.
China? Yeah.
Oh, we export it there, right?
We export a lot of pork and a lot of beef to China and other Asian countries, yes.
Yes. Which leads me to believe Mongolian beef might not be as authentic as perhaps I thought.
Oh, we could do a whole episode on Chinese food, bro, but most of that stuff is just born in America. All the things that we eat at Chinese restaurants here, General Tso's, orange chicken, sesame chicken, Mongolian beef, all that stuff is born out of San Francisco.
Randy almost got a job at Lian Chin's, which is our like fast food Chinese. I call it Lian Double Chin. And it's all Americanized. I mean, chocolate covered fortune cookies. Fortune cookies aren't even Chinese. They're American, aren't they?
No, fortune cookies are made in Minnesota, I believe.
Huh. How about that? I did not know that.
I think authentic Chinese food, and I think you've both been to at least, I know, Cullen, you have, Chinatown. If your meal's hanging in the window, then it's authentic.
I always like the Chinese groceries because I can go get a barbecue duck for $20.
You know what? We have to do a Chinese episode. Well, let's get back to beef, guys.
Thanks, Captain.
Because I could talk about Chinese all day long, you know?
Same.
Sure, ribs.
Oh, ribs. Beef ribs?
Yeah, beef ribs.
Beef ribs. There's a place here in El Paso called Rib Hut. It's on the campus of UTEP, University of Texas.
It's called Rib Hut?
Rib Hut.
That's awesome.
It's an A-frame building, you know? And awesome. They serve like barbecue, but the best thing is the you get three beef ribs that are a pound a piece for $20. And it comes with a side of curly fries. And their sauce, it's not heavily sauced, but it's barbecued Texas style to perfection. So it's tender and it's crispy on the outside. And you just get a little bit of the vinegar tomato punch from the sauce. And then you cover it and slather it in the sauce when it's close to the bone. Oh my God.
So it's not a super viscous sauce?
No, it's very liquidy.
Okay. And is it spicy? Are there like hot peppers in it? Or is it just the vinegar that gives it a pop?
Or no, both? There's definitely hot peppers in there.
Mm. How do you like to prepare your ribs, Randy?
I'm a big brown sugar molasses guy. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then smoke them if I can. Any chance I get. I used to have one of those electronic digital smokers.
Nice, classic. Yeah.
So I could just like...
The one with the pucks?
No. So I guess it did have some element to that. It had like the thing you would put at the bottom. And then you put your chips on top of it. You would heat them up and smoke them.
And it was electronically controlled.
Yeah, so I could be sitting on the couch and I could pull up a little screen and see what temperature it was and turn it up or down.
Oh my God, that's so nice. So I have a smoker too, but it's a Pit Boss pellet smoker. So I can put whatever pellets I want in there and I could adjust the temperature. It has an auger that feeds the pellets into a firebox and they're all wood. So it gets a lot of wood flavor. You get a smoke ring no matter how long you cook things for. But my problem with that smoker is that it usually dries things out. I have to wrap them before they even hit 160.
Yeah, my problem is I dry my ribs out if I don't get like good ribs. And usually if I'm doing ribs, I'm buying the cheapest ones I can because I want as many as I can make. So I don't know if there's a good solution to that besides brining the shit out of them or something.
My parents boil the ribs first and then put them on the grill.
That's a very popular way to do it in restaurants.
That's the most Wisconsin thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, when you boil ribs, they're more fall off the bone than when you barbecue them.
You know what I forgot to talk about? This is also kind of a classic Midwestern dish. If we get back to ground beef, cabbage rolls.
Okay, explain cabbage rolls. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, so you boil or steam cabbage, and then you make a ground beef, rice, season it however you want. I would probably do like Fresno pepper, maybe some fire garlic roasted tomato from the can, and then you wrap it, you roll it in the cabbage, you bake it, and then halfway through you put more sauce on top.
That's not Midwestern, that's Wisconsin German. And on the topic of, and speaking about beef dishes, how about the cannibal sandwich?
Oh, that's right. I was telling Colin about it, but I can't remember. I couldn't remember what it was called.
Yeah, I want to hear about that.
Tell the internet what that is, Randy. And it's a Wisconsin sandwich, right?
That's a Wisconsin German thing. I've had them in Iowa too, because we're Germaned out the ass down there as well. But yeah, it's very unique to Wisconsin. So it's basically just raw beef with sliced onions, like salt and pepper, on bread. And there's nothing more to it than that. That's just all it is. And it's like a popular little like rural Midwestern thing.
I like beef tartare, the Saint Dinette, which a plug for that if you're familiar with the farmer's market in St. Paul. Randy knows we have the steak tartare nachos, but that's different than just raw. Maybe it's the texture that I couldn't deal with.
I love steak tartare. I will tell you a story. I had raw ground beef once. I attended a private dinner that was hosted by a aspiring chef, and it was one of those pop-up dinners where you pay in advance and it's a prefix menu. And it was in a garden that was nicely lit, and then there were servers, and it was really nice. But the third dish he served was it was a little basket of raw ground beef that he had literally just cranked out minutes before in the kitchen. And it had an egg yolk in it, and it was seasoned. And that was it.
Was it really?
And it was amazing. It was amazing. It was like one of the best ground beef dishes I've ever had. I would never do that myself because I don't trust the ground beef that I buy to eat it raw.
Same.
But, you know, the fact that he ground it right there and then made me comfortable enough to eat it.
Yeah, Ian, that just for you.
Oh, there's a picture. Thanks.
Oh, I got to see this.
It's exactly what it is.
Holy crap. Onions and raw beef on a hoagie.
Yeah, that's all it is. And every year, the Wisconsin Department of Health has to issue a warning against eating them because people keep getting salmonella every year. Because people aren't buying tartare-grade beef. Yeah, exactly. Do this. They're getting that shit at Walmart. You warm up in the sink and then squeeze out of
the
tube. That's
what I'm talking about, the 2% bone stuff.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you can see some of that in there.
Oh, it's weird.
Randy, do you think?
Yeah, for sure.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask, Randy, do you think Lunds and Byerly's, which is our local fancy store, they would have tartare-grade beef? I bet Whole Foods would.
I'm happy to watch you find out.
Nice. Long as I can use your bathroom.
Ha! Nah, I'm good. My other Midwestern beef thing that really sticks with me, being, you know, a child of this region, those like Thursday night tacos you would get with like the hard shells that came in the box and like the seasoning packet.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Old El Paso.
American tacos, right?
Yeah, I guess. Just the mainstay.
They use turkey for that, actually. Yeah, huh. I loved it. With the American taco seasoning, it's ground turkey is so good with that, with the high fat content.
Yeah, and you seem to have like a background in, you know, a little bit of culinary things. What's the goofiest or like most unusual beef dish you've encountered or like cut or just anything interesting?
Okay, so something weird with beef.
Something I wouldn't see at a restaurant in my day-to-day.
I mean, I guess the weirdest thing that you could put beef in that I saw, and this is going back to culinary school, is a terrine. Those things are so gross.
I'm going to need you to expand.
Okay, it's made with aspic, which is gelatin.
Oh, God.
And you take vegetables and you take meat and you take whatever you want and you cook it, and then you put it in a loaf pan with a bunch of gelatin juice, and then you make it solid, and you serve little cubes of it at room temperature.
Oh my God, you ruined my day.
That's an old school French restaurant thing that they made us learn, which is absolutely horrid. I remember every day in the cafeteria, we had like 300 people eating meals in the cafeteria, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And you have to work the cafeteria for a semester. The terrines would go untouched. Nobody ate them. We threw them all away, every single one of them.
That reminds me of those old school like Time magazines or Life magazine. Back when gelatin was a unique thing in the 60s. All sorts of gelatin dishes.
Yeah, it's disgusting, bro. We had to do that. We had to like make little arrangements with like carrots and onions and potatoes. and then solidify them almost like we were making like an art piece, like a happy face, you know? And then like put them on a plate and like hang them up.
We're at the 50-minute mark. What else should we talk about beef wise?
We should talk about roast, man. Roast.
Yeah, roast beef.
Beef roast.
Yeah, you guys do roast beef. I like mine with horsey sauce, but I've never made it before.
Well, that's sliced roast beef. I'm also talking about like roast beef.
You're talking like a Sunday roast.
Yeah, like a pot roast.
No, I like you can't have horsey sauce with your pot roast. I do.
You can absolutely have horsey sauce with any beef product. I completely agree. Even horsey sauce on a steak.
Pressure cooker or slow cooker? Is there anything better?
Slow cooker is better. So here's what happens with high collagen content pieces of meat, including things like the rump and the round roasts, you know, the things that have a lot of elastin, the things that won't be tender if you just grill them up. If you cook them slowly from the beginning, they start to melt. The collagen turns into gelatin around 180 degrees. So what happens is when you cook things slowly, it just kind of develops this soft like pliability where you can take a fork to it, push it, and it would just all the meat strands would just collapse, you know? If you put that in a pressure cooker, it's going to do the same thing, but you're going to end up having to cut the beef. You're not going to be able to shred it the same way, you know? So it's about cooking it slowly, not cooking it fast. If you raise the temperature fast, what happens is the proteins are like protein molecules are like little springs. Okay. So when you cook them fast, they shrink and it expels all the moisture from the meat. I learned all this from the books I've read, man. I read cookbooks for fun. So anyway, the idea is to cook it slow. It's the same thing with pork. It's the same thing with lamb. It's the same thing with venison. All these different meats that are red meats, ostrich, whatever, you know, if you cook them slow, they'll become way more tender. And that's what you want, you know. I think that is, you know, the Sunday pot roast, a Dutch oven is the best tool to use. I have a cast iron Dutch oven. I love that thing. No matter what you put in it, you just cover it in liquid, put some vegetables in there, some potatoes, cube meat, and you put it in the oven for an hour and you get this beautiful stew that's so well seasoned. And the meat just falls apart. Amazing.
Maybe some parsnips?
Oh, yeah. The Aryan carrot.
I love that. The Aryan carrot.
That was my old friend's gamer tag.
And was he into parsnips or like some other sort of ideology?
He's one of the piss people off.
Well, fair enough. That works.
Works for me, man. What else are we talking about? Or
we can talk about butchering beef.
And I'm actually going to be skipping out for that part because I have to go.
Where are you going, Randy?
I got to go to the bathroom.
Oh, are we hanging out when you're done?
Yeah, sure. But I really have to go.
Okay, bye. Bye. Thanks, Randy.
Bye, nice Randy. To meet you, Colin.
Nice to meet you.
We are recording and we can talk about butchering real quick. Want to still talk about butchering?
Yeah, just real quick. You know, you can. There's all sorts of things you can do if you have the ability to store meat in the freezer. You can buy, you know, a quarter a side of beef. You can buy a side of beef. You can buy a whole cow. You know, $5 a pound is a great price to pay for good beef, and you get so many different cuts that you'll use throughout the year. So, you know, when you're breaking down big cuts like a chuck with like a bone end chuck, you know, the important thing is try to remove as much of that elastin as possible. And remember that when you're butchering, you got to keep the fat content in mind. So it depends on what you're using it for. You know, if you're going to do a stew, you don't want a big fat cap on the outside of your beef. You know, you want to trim that off. If you're making roast beef or brisket, you want to leave that fat on there because it's going to cook and actually go into the beef, and you know the little fat drips are going to activate the fire in the grill. And so, you know, there's all sorts of reasons to consider what you're doing, but I would recommend anybody that's really into beef to try to explore local options, try to meet a farmer, try to find somebody that can sell you, you know, a part of a cow.
Until episode 3.
Cool, guys. Thanks for listening. This is fun.
That was Bussin' Beef, episode 2 of Colin and Friends Culinary Creations. We hope you enjoyed our program and guest home cook, Randy Watson. As a reminder, Colin and Friends supports local, organic, and sustainable food products whenever logistically and economically possible. Copyright 2024, Lower Town Media Company.